Listen to the sound of men shaving their balls before the age of Manscaped. Yeah! Those screams are a thing of the past thanks to Manscaped. No more cuts and nicks with the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0, featuring advanced skin-safe technology so you keep your bad boys nice and smooth. The battery will last up to 90 minutes so you can take a longer, more satisfying shave. So many people have written in stories about how the Lawnmower 3.0 has changed their lives. They even included pictures so I could see the smoothness for myself. They aren't kidding. You need to try this out for yourself. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code VSIN at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. 20% off, free shipping to manscaped.com. Use the code VSIN. Your partner and your balls will thank you.
It's time to follow the money with your hosts, Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard.
Yes, here we go. Pauly Howard, Matt Humans. Busy show coming up. Mitch out today. Follow the money on VSiN. We have a jam-packed show. We'll try to get everything in the next 3 hours. Follow us on Twitter. We have Ron Flatter to recap the Florida Derby, to talk horse racing. Dan Saley will be on to talk college football. Mark Cannizzaro to go over golf as well. And Sam Gordon, as he had the article late last week from the Las Vegas Review-Journal about the NBA maybe coming out here and playing at the Thomas and Mack and the T-Mobile as well. We'll hear from Phil Simms coming up. The most dominant pitching performance, in my opinion, of all time aired Saturday on ESPN. Draft rumors, draft props, a lot to get to. How you doing, Matt?
Pretty good, Pauly. Good to see you, man. It looks like you've been shopping at the VSiN store. You have the VSiN polo. Is that new?
Yes.
Yeah.
I got a couple of them, thanks to Bill 80. Yeah, absolutely. It's a fantastic shirt. Got to get up there.
Good. I hope you got that comped. Hey, it was a wild weekend, Pauly. Wild weekend. I think I left the house 3 times. How about you?
Yes. I left the house once. And let me tell you something. two things we've discussed a lot here on the last couple weeks. Number one was the prop, more babies or more divorces. And Chuck Edel made a fantastic number. He has divorces $1.30. Mm-hmm. We think that should be higher. But the other thing we kicked around was, are people gonna lose or gain weight? Gain weight's got to be 250 right now after what I saw over the weekend. Driving around on a Friday night at a Raising Cane's, which they have the best chicken fingers, Raising Cane's next to In-N-Out Burger, 20, 30 cars deep in the drive-thru. You see that every time you drive through a McDonald's. You say it looks like Woodstock every time you go buy a Chick-fil-A. I mean, I'm telling you, number one, the gym memberships are going to go through the roof when we get back to normal. And the other thing, I would invest in the lose weight fast pill, whatever, all that stuff that's out there. Because once we get back to normal here, I mean, people are still going crazy with the drive-thrus.
Well, how can you not? I mean, that's a chance to get out of the house. And, you know, I love the fast food drive-thrus. You said 250. I would say even higher. I don't know, Pauly. I typically eat a lot anyway, but I've been eating 6 or 7 meals a day just because you eat. And then 2 hours later, like, I got nothing to do. I'm hungry. And then you eat again, right? I mean, right. I think 6.5 meals a day has been my average for the past week and a half. What about you?
3 to 4, but I start with the bagel here. Well, yeah, because the other thing is you're trapped in the house, so maybe you can go for a jog. You got nothing else to do, right? Nothing on TV. You can't watch the news every day. Maybe you go for a walk. Maybe you go for a jog, or you have some type of equipment in your house as well. So that's why I say gain weight minus 250. But
yeah.
Just based on what you're seeing here, and other people chimed in as well. And then Mitch, who's out today, made a comment that he went to Chick-fil-A over the weekend. He was saying what looked like a 45-minute wait at Chick-fil-A, but something that is astonishing. Mm. They are so efficient, and you are just speechless at how well-run a Chick-fil-A drive-thru is, with 2 lanes where you got a guy out there directing traffic, and what should have been a half hour to 45 minute delay or wait turned out to only be like 10, 15 minutes. And you get right through and you get your food and you get out of there.
I've always been amazed by the efficiency of the Chick-fil-A drive-thru. Talked about this for years. Adam Hill and I started going to Chick-fil-A in San Diego several years ago. we were amazed at how quickly they moved the customers through and served the food. And the employees are always very hospitable. Imagine, Paulie, if the U.S. government ran as efficiently as a Chick-fil-A drive-through.
Sure, absolutely.
Could you imagine that? What a great country this would be.
Huh? No, right.
We'd have no problems.
No, we would.
I watched the clown show press conference yesterday, and I was like, geez, you got to be freaking kidding me. This is where the country is right now?
Yeah, it's a real piece of theater yesterday. Yeah,
the Chick-fil-A drive-through is a work of art. I mean, it is a masterpiece. It is the gold standard of fast food drive-throughs.
For Christmas, yeah. Mitch got me a gift card last year, as well as the other members of the staff. And I walked in, because it was a $50 gift card. So I kept ordering and ordering and ordering, because I was just going to take everything. They had the food ready in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It was
5-10
minutes. They had it right out. It's incredible. Not just the drive-through, but what they do on the inside as well. I mean, that is a top-notch, well-run, no matter where you are with Chick-fil-A, they do an excellent job too. So we'd love to have them as a sponsor as well. Maybe get a comp chicken sandwich
should
out of
be
it
a
too.
Sponsor after this.
Oh. Yeah. Oh yes, sure. But that was it was astonishing, Matt. Where you're just going drive through after drive through after drive through, and it's 20, 30 cars deep. I'm like, oh, everyone's going to be a blimp here when this is all said and done, and we get back to normal, right? Welcome in, Follow the Money, Paulie and Matt Humans on VSiN. Mitch Moss out today. Okay, so we got a lot to get to here coming up. We have a college football update. We have a Major League Baseball update. We have a Premier League update, and maybe Tiger Phil part two. Let me start with this, with college. So Friday when we got off the air, Kirk Herbstreit makes the comments about, I don't know if we're going to see football again. I think it'd be a bad idea, which, Kirk, you can't make these comments. You're not a doctor, and we're 3 months away from deciding that anyways. So you're freaking people out. But then after that interview aired and TMZ picked that up, we had this report from Michael Smith of Sports Business Journal that one of the scenarios for playing college football this year consists of moving the season to July, August, and September. The decision to accelerate the season will be driven by concerns that the virus could subside in the warmer months and return in the fall. An abbreviated college football season played in the summer months could be the best and only way to get a college football season accomplished, as Mike Florio writes on Pro Football Talk. It's in the early stages, but Smith reports that the scenario, like a summer season, will be discussed by the powers that be.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of this here?
I think it's asinine, Paul. I think it's a ridiculously bad idea. We'll talk to Dan Saley about this in the next hour. He and I talked about it on the phone yesterday. We're basically in agreement with this. I think panic is setting in here with a lot of leagues, a lot of franchises, and a lot of players. You're looking at all the money that's going to be lost and trying to figure out how can we recoup some of this money? How can we maybe save some of this TV network money? How can we, salvage the season? And they're coming up with lame brain ideas like this. Paul, the college campuses are closed. They're probably going to be closed all summer. How are you going to bring back 80 players or more? You know what? If it's basketball, I think it's doable because you've only got 12 players. College football program's going to bring 80 to 100 players back to campus when the campus is closed. You're going to play college football in the summer. I think this is one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard. Why not just sit back, let's play this out, and let's see if the season can start on time in September. And if anything, maybe it's a shortened schedule, that starts in October, maybe mid-September, where you just play a conference schedule. I know that's been batted around. That's not the worst idea in the world. That instead of 12 games, you play 8 games. Maybe something like that happens, but Paul, I see no conceivable idea where college football in the summer makes sense. And another thing, you're putting the student athletes kind of in harm's way too. And I think you're opening a can of worms here that you don't want to get near.
Well, are these night games? Because how many of these areas are it's going to be 100 degrees or high 90s with the humidity when you're talking about playing in July? The other thing is, you mentioned it too, and it's the same thing with the NBA and then the Premier League, which we'll get to in a second. These are billion-dollar TV deals.
Sure.
So are they going to come out and say, we have to have our football and get these games on TV? And then also part of the plan would be that these are, I guess, are just conference games only. And you do away with the non-conference schedule because it's a shortened season. You go July, August, maybe into September as well. So that's one thing they're going to kick around and explore. But that those are a lot of questions, too, about night games. I mean, how hot is it going to be? Where are you playing the games? Yeah. All that stuff, too. I mean, this
doesn't make sense. First of all, you don't have the time to schedule all this. And, you know, maybe that's secondary. I should say, first of all, Paul, how are you going to bring 80 to 100 players back to campus when the campuses are closed right now? And obviously, at some point this summer, maybe some campuses reopen. But I think this is a logistical nightmare and just kind of it sounds like a Hail Mary that has no shot.
Well, what if this happens? Or if you also want to get into practices and what does that mean for new quarterbacks? Yeah. And if there's a quarterback battle, everything. I mean, once you say, okay, well, come back in June.
When are you going to practice?
That's another thing, too.
So you're just going to come back, you're just going to play games and, have like 2 weeks of practice. See, this, nothing about this proposal makes sense. What it is, it's like I think it's a desperate money grab. Like, is there a way we can salvage this TV contract because there's so much money at stake here? I think that's basically all it is.
Okay.
Does it sound like to you that any part of this plan would be in the best interest of the student athletes? I can't.
Well, the back end of it, yeah. I mean, if, like, you listen to Fauci and other guys that thought saying that this could be a second wave, and if it comes again at the later part of the year, and they want to do it because it'll be warmer out there. But the fascinating part of this is when we're talking about when are sports coming back, these are billion-dollar TV deals. So as Aaron Redding said, the NBA needs those 70 games for the local TV deals and the regional TV outlets, and then they have to get their playoff games on for TNT and ESPN. And this is what the same thing we're doing with the Premier League, which we'll get to in a second. And they might go get as far away from possible, go to a remote location and try to do the same thing and play every day with what they're doing. So we'll get to that coming up and more
on this. I agree with certain things make sense. Like, you know, we've talked about this NBA playoff plan at length here on this show for the past week and a half. That makes sense because you can put 16 teams in one city, quarantine the players and the teams, whatever. And it's not that tough to do logistically. Paul, I think it's 100 times more difficult, if not more, to squeeze a college football season into the summer months when you don't have much time to plan this thing and you have so many more players and teams involved. I just don't see how it can happen. The NBA playoffs, yeah, that could happen. Pro soccer, there's certain things you can pull off here. College football, I think, is the most difficult thing to pull off. You're talking about 130 teams.
Yes, and the rosters. I'll agree with you on that one. The rosters, the difference between basketball and football as well. So a baseball update, too, as we got off the air. This came down Friday, and Bob Nightingale had this from USA Today as he talked to Tony Clark, that they could go right up until Thanksgiving if need be. And Union Chief Tony Clark said, players want to play. That's what they want to do. Being able to get back on the field and being able to play, even if that means their fans are watching at home and everything is on the table.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we could play as long as we possibly could. The weather becomes a challenge the later you get in the calendar year, but we would do our best to play as many games regardless of when we start. How many games remains to be seen. They threw out a couple places, threw out 81 over the weekend. Also has been thrown out about if they get to the World Series and it's backed up to November, you'd go warm weather or neutral sites as well, or even domes. But he said, going back to what Clark said about they're willing to play more than 21 consecutive games, waive travel restrictions, and add doubleheaders. They would expand rosters. He said, everything's on the table, and the players are open to everything. So that's fantastic what Clark said, that he's been talking to the players. And these guys, he's right, these guys just want to play, and they're open to anything, and anything goes as far as travel. We'll play 20 days in a row. We'll play doubleheaders. We'll play in front of fans. We just want to be back out there.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by this at all. I mean, if you're sitting around your house and you're looking at the the specter of the baseball season being canceled. If you're a baseball player who was in camp, you would, if they ask you, would you be willing to do this? You would say, yes, yes, yes. You'd be willing to do anything at this point just to get in the baseball season. So that doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, it's how late can you play? I think you could probably even push the baseball season back into early December and somehow make it work. I would think it's still going to be a 100-game season at the most. And I don't know. I still think a lot of times, Paul, it comes down to the leagues, the teams, and the players looking at how much money they could lose if a season gets wiped out. Nobody wants to do that. At the same time, you know, everybody's going a little bit stir-crazy, stuck at home, and I think these guys would be willing to play basically every day without a day off for 3 or 4 months if that's what it takes.
Sure. Yeah. And the other, yeah, and it's something we discussed on Friday's show that was floated out there. I'm all for this too. Mm-hmm. If you have to go 81 games or 100 games, whatever, you can add playoff teams. You need more important and meaningful games. I would be on board with that as well.
That's the best idea because you want more dramatic games, more meaningful games. So if you play an 81 game regular season, add more playoff teams, I think that would actually enhance the baseball season. We've talked about this, Paul. Who came up with the idea 100 years ago or whatever? Hey, let's play 162 games. I know the season used to be shorter, but it was just a little bit shorter. Who thought 162 games was the right length for a baseball season? It's way too long anyway. We don't need 162 games. Mm-hmm. Shorten the regular season, expand the playoffs, and that's what the TV networks want too. They want more meaningful games because when you have playoff games, you get higher ratings. When it's a one-or-done type, do-or-die type scenario, you get more people to tune in, you get higher TV ratings. So I think the season should be shortened anyway and the playoffs expanded.
Yes, follow the money. Paulie and Matt Humans get to win-lose coming up and best and worst stadiums in 20 minutes. Now, soccer, and I love this. This came out yesterday. Mm-hmm. The Premier League has developed plans for clubs to play televised games in isolated World Cup-style camps in the Midlands and London over June and July in order to try and finish the season. The football authorities have been in discussions about ideas over the weekend, with games behind closed doors still seen as the likeliest solution. But the idea of isolated camps is one the clubs keep returning to. It's gained traction in the last few days. Money. The huge broadcasting contracts and other financial concerns have increased the pressure on clubs to complete the season. But one considerable advantage to the idea is that would be a TV mega event. Mm-hmm. The Independent has been told plans have been drawn up to televise all remaining 92 matches with a handful on every day over the summer months. In order to complete the plan, clubs and their staffs would be confined to separate hotels away from their families, just like an international tournament, with full testing and quarantine conditions. Because, I mean, you get one case, it could derail the whole thing.
Sure.
This is why the idea is for games to take place in June or July, when a much rigorous testing system is likely to be in place and the curve has hopefully been flattened. It's not just clubs that would have to be confined to quarantine bases, but also officials, cameramen, and outside broadcast crews. One source brought up, what does a player do if he breaks his leg or he's stretchered off? You'd have to have a hospital blocked off as well. But this is something that is gaining momentum here, and they've been talking about that you have World Cup-style isolated camps, have to finish it, mega TV event. There's games every day, June and July, Premier League.
Well, I think that makes sense. We're going to have to get used to tournaments like this where there are no fans involved, and they're made for TV events. The NBA playoffs makes perfect sense. I wonder if the NHL playoffs would be as easy to pull off. Probably not, but I'm sure the NHL is trying to figure out a way to do this. I think it's pretty easy to do for soccer. Paul, I walked into Red Rock Sportsbook about, I'm going to say, 3 weeks ago, right before it shut down, and there was an Italian soccer league game on with no fans, and they were pumping like crowd noise in through the loudspeakers. And I got to tell you, I watched it for like 15 minutes, and it did not seem that bizarre. I think these things work on TV with no fans. The one thing I'm not sure is going to work on TV is football. How is football going to work with no fans when you're used to seeing 70,000 fans in a stadium or more, and it's dead quiet? I think it can work. I guess if it can work for European soccer, it could work for American football. But, it's – it's going to be really bizarre, and I think tough for us to get adjusted to watching football games with no fans. I mean, it's probably going to come to that at some point, right? I mean, if the season – can you imagine the Raiders and Buccaneers opening on Sunday Night Football in Las Vegas and there are no fans in the new Raiders stadium on the Strip?
Yeah. And because of this report that came out Sunday, I know that Mike Florio from Pro Football Talks said this is something the NFL might have to do, which I don't know what would be considered isolated and okay. I guess if you look at the numbers, maybe Idaho or Montana, I don't know. But if you would take a bunch of NFL teams and say, okay, you're playing here. Hey, another sport that's been quiet too. How about tennis? That you brought. Now, you can't make noise anyways during tennis. And I think it was Wimbledon where they said they completely shut down the idea of playing in closed stadiums, which why couldn't tennis play where you're not even close to the other person? It's just two of them. You need two ball boys and the ump or the chairman, what is it called? The ump up there. And then a couple ball boys and a couple, you could play in an empty stadium to play tennis too. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah. The big picture here, what we're talking about is when can some of these, professional leagues start to return to action without fans? And I think we are going to see it later in the summer. Tennis makes a lot of sense, Paul. And so does golf. I know there are more people involved with putting on a major golf tournament than just the players you put on the course. But as long as you test everybody and you're out, in the wide open spaces in the summer when it's hot, why can't you play tennis? Why can't you play golf? Tennis is actually easier to pull off than golf, but I think you should be able to do them both. So there are some things I think we can see this summer returning. I don't want to be all doom and gloom. I read the Kirk Herbstreit quote over the weekend, too, and I don't blame Herbstreit for saying it. His opinion is, I think, echoed by a lot of people that the football season's in jeopardy, but at the same time, I don't want to think about that, trying to be positive. I think there's a chance for almost every sport to return in some form this summer, Paul, except college football. That plan makes no sense to me.
All right, very good. Win-lose coming up. You won't believe what Cuomo said yesterday. I tweeted about that. We'll get to that as well. And it was the best pitching performance in MLB history. ESPN showed it on Saturday. All that coming up on Follow the Money next. VSiN, baby. Great job by ESPN over the weekend. We'll talk about some of the old sporting events that they showed on Saturday and Sunday, and also best and worst stadiums coming up as well. Man, it's a fantastic list. But first, win-lose.
Rough night.
Can't call it a bad beat. Definitely lose some.
Good night. How does it make you feel?
I absolutely hate them. I absolutely hate them.
Follow the Money looks back so we can learn for today.
Everything's an adventure.
In Win Some, Lose Some. Let the education commence.
All right, Win Some. It's Win Some, Matt Eumanns. At the end of Friday's show, it was the second best breakdown in the history of the network as Mitch was celebrating his 10-year wedding anniversary as Matt broke down, why would you get married? And I never thought of it this way, but as Matt said, Matt, in 40 years, I've never had anyone call me saying, I got to tell you, this marriage thing is fantastic.
It's awesome. You got to try it.
I thought of it that way. No one has ever reached out and said, you know what? If you're thinking about doing something, I mean, you really got to think about getting married here because it is awesome. I got to tell you, no one's ever done. I mean, that's never happened in 40 years. Second, of course, the best breakdown was Larry Pepe on McGregor and Habib years ago. Win Some, Premier League. Not only would this be great for us in sports and to come back and escape and alleviate boredom, the betting handle globally would be nuts if they could have Premier League soccer on television every single day in June and July. Win Some. number 54. Look at this. Look at this at William Hill over the weekend. Look at this guy. Congratulations to the guy who hit a $50 10-team table tennis parlay. Are you serious? Paid $9,000.
All favorites. Do you see that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
This is amazing. And I think the shortest price favorite is 135, but they're all between 135 and 160. Looks like 165. But he goes 10 for 10 for $9,676. That's a hell of a hit. I thought that was incredible, Paul.
It is. Yes, you're right. And you're right. All favorites, and the fact that a guy's got it put in a monster table tennis parlay and it comes in. Oh, I saw that tweet on Sunday. That's lunacy.
Do you think he knows anything about the players, or he just played all 10 favorites take a shot on all 10 favorites?
The latter. Yes, the latter. Absolutely. Maybe you should hang out with this guy. This was sent in from a viewer, our buddy in Washington. Look at this here with the booze. Number 58. Look at this. Got my shipment this week. Win some. Holy cow. He's got the Tito's vodka. He's got the Blue Moon, the Corona. He's got some wine. It looks like he has, what is that, 4 cases of Miller Lite. And there's something on the side as well in the back. That must have been the wine. But look at that setup. Big time shipment.
I got to tell you, I just can't drink Corona right now.
Okay.
I hate that word.
Fair enough. Lose some. I was watching this yesterday. Spoiler alert, if you have kids. Spoiler alert. So I'm watching Cuomo, and he says, well, you know, a lot of people would think this. A lot of people believe that. Some people believe in Santa Claus. I don't. There's no Santa Claus. I mean, can you imagine if you're watching that with and one guy actually tweeted in that I was watching this with my 6-year-old. I'm like, what did he just say? And Cuomo said that. So lose some if you're watching that, and a bad beat too if you're watching with your kid, just thinking, okay, let me see what Cuomo has to say. And he slips in the Santa Claus line there too. Ozark season 3, I found it very disappointing, especially the last 4 or 5 episodes. And the Ben character, I mean, I was waiting for the guy to get whacked or get him the hell out of there for like 3-4. What a stupid character that was. Very disappointing with Ozark season 3, although I'm a hard grader. Lose some. How about the hair? Matt, what would you do if this happened to you? Check out this lady on the flight where she's got the hair draped over the seat.
Oh, boy. Are you serious?
Scissors or match, Chris tweets.
Yeah, that's unacceptable. God. You can't. The flight attendants have got to do something about that. You can't have the person in front of you throwing their hair in your lap like that. That's sick, man. Come on.
Diana Rossini from ESPN. This was a good tweet. As she's a Jersey girl, I thought it would be kind to stop by my parents' house, beep the horn, and wave to them. My mom opened the front door and just yelled, "Get the hell out of here." I think she meant forever. At Diana ESPN on Twitter. Tough crowd. Jeez, you just want to check in on your parents who are old.
Make sure.
I know, right? Just say, "Get the hell out of here." Win Lose brought to you by First Bet. We still have horse racing, the new betting and handicapping product from Express Bet. First Bet features include wagering all the top tracks, AI-enhanced handicapping tools that tap into a library of more than 200,000 past races. Visit first.com/bet for more info. Use the promo code VEASAN500, all one word, to get a $10 free bet as soon as you sign up. First.com/bet. Best and worst stadiums, and the best performance in MLB history by a pitcher. Straight ahead on Follow the Money next. Follow us on Twitter and also email the show ftm@vsin.com. We'll need your help as always in about 5 minutes. Great job by ESPN over the weekend. They showed some of the 20 strikeout games, and they started with Roger Clemens and our fans in New England. I mean, it went Clemens, Wood, Randy Johnson, and then Max Scherzer. But we started the day with the Clemens, the first one rather, in 1986. The Celtics had a playoff game that night, Matt. It was late April. There were only 13,000 fans at Fenway. The Red Sox trailed 1-0 in the bottom of the seventh, and then Dwight Evans hit a home run. Red Sox win 3-1. Clemens gives up one earned run, three hits, 20 strikeouts as they win 3-1. And he was striking out the side. It was like the Kerry Wood performance as well, where it usually would fade down the stretch. Clemens is still striking out the side in the seventh, eighth, ninth inning, putting all these guys down. Mm-hmm. And then the Kerry Wood game, which is the best pitching performance of all time. Remember something here. The Houston Astros that year won 102 games. Biggio, Hall of Famer. Bagwell, Hall of Famer. Derek Bell was leading the National League in average at the time. And that game was early May 1998. Moises Alou was on the team. 20 strikeouts, one hit, which was an error. Ricky Gutierrez hit a ground ball to Kevin Orr. He's in the third inning. He's got to come up with it. I can't believe to this. I watched it over and over again that they gave Gutierrez a hit on that. But what the ball was moving like a wiffle ball. And as we've talked about on the show a couple times, Bill Spier swung in a pitch that almost hit him. And Steve Stone accurately pointed out at the start of the game, Biggio swung at a fastball that was in the glove of the catcher, Sandy Martinez. That's how nasty the breaking ball was, and that he guessed wrong, but that a Hall of Famer looks so foolish as Kerry Wood, just the best pitching performance I've ever seen. And I think the best, because he should have had a no-hitter and a 20-strikeout game in the same game.
Yeah, it was probably the best one I've seen, too. And it's kind of a regret for me, Paul. I lived in Chicago at the time, and we were talking about, a buddy and I were talking about going to the Cubs game that day. But it was the middle of the week. The Astros actually pounded the Cubs the previous day. I think it was like Astros scored like 10 runs the previous day, pounded the Cubs. But it was one of those typical Chicago days. You know what it's like. It's overcast.
It rained later.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to rain. And said, you know what? It's crappy weather. Let's not go. Just watch it on TV. So I just watched the Kerry Wood 20-strikeout game on TV. I lived about 2 miles from Wrigley Field. So
wow.
I did not go to the game, but watched it. And the thing is, he walked nobody in that game. He strike out 20 with no walks. You got Astros hitters looking like fools. I will say this. I was a little concerned for Kerry Wood at the time because of the torque he was putting on his arm. When you watch that, a young pitcher like that, and I used to pitch as well, I didn't think he was going to have a long career because, you know, if you watch Roger Clemens, he gets more of his butt and lower body into it. He doesn't put as much stress on his arm. Kerry Wood was putting all kinds of stress on his elbow with that breaking ball he was throwing at the time. I mean, you recall that, right? I mean, it was wicked torque he was putting. I said, this guy's not going to have a long, you know, career if he pitches like this. Unfortunately, I was right. Roger Clemens, Paul, when he had that first 20 strikeout game, he was 23, and he had another one 10 years later for the Red Sox. Kerry Wood, obviously, his career got cut short, but that one game was about as good as it gets, and I remember that vividly. I lived in Chicago at the time. I watched it on TV a couple miles away.
Yeah, thank God for the WGN at the time, the superstation, and that was his fifth career start, too.
That's right.
That's unbelievable. That was Kerry Wood's fifth start of his career, 20 strikeouts.
And you remember how carried away people were at the time? They thought, wow, this guy's going to be the next Cy Young, right? He's going to be the greatest pitcher in baseball. And then 5 years later, Kerry Wood's injury problem, I think it was 5 years later, Kerry Wood's injury problem started. So disappointing.
Right. This picked up a lot of steam. So good job by ESPN. That was fun to watch all day Saturday. This picked up a lot of steam on Twitter. I think it was Chad Finn who started it. But they got into best stadium, worst stadium, best place to watch a game. And you've been all over the place going to sporting events and covering sports, but also as a fan. And I think this would be a fun discussion as well. And you mentioned Wrigley, and I used to go every summer. To me, no matter what sport you're talking about, if you want to talk about best or have a list of best stadiums, Wrigley Field's got to be up there. I mean, Wrigley Field has got to be one or two because of the history. It's right in a neighborhood, the ivy, the bleacher creatures, everything involved. And certainly the Ricketts family has done an incredible job of adding stuff around Wrigleyville and the neighborhood and everything around there as well. But to me, it's just you're speechless the first time you come out. You're walking in a neighborhood, all of a sudden you look. I'm like, my God, it's right there. There's the cathedral, Wrigley Field.
Yeah, it's awesome because you have so many bars around the park too. But
right.
You know, when I go to Wrigley and I've been there as a media member, I'd prefer not to be up in the press box. I want to be out in the bleachers, Paul, drinking, yep. Having a good time at the park, like an average fan. That's my I think that's the best place you can see a baseball game. So I put together my list here of the top 10 arenas and stadiums, and these are all places where I've seen games. And I actually had a tough time, Paul, cutting down this list. I had about 25 stadiums on the list. I was like, man, I don't want to cut that. I don't want to cut that one. But mm-hmm. I've got the Rose Bowl at number one. The Rose Bowl is just an awesome place to see a football game. Sitting at the foot of the San Gabriel Mountains, the weather's always beautiful. It's just an awesome place to be. I can't imagine any stadium better than the Rose Bowl. Number two, I've got Wrigley Field. Number three, I've got Hinkle Fieldhouse, where Butler plays in Indianapolis. Hinkle is, I think, built in 1928. I like, if you notice on my list here, it's a lot of old stadiums. I appreciate the history. Uh-huh. And I played high school basketball in Indiana. And so many of those high school gyms in Indiana are just really cool places to play and watch a game. And Hinkle Fieldhouse is a cathedral in the state of Indiana. That's number three on my list. If you haven't seen a game there someday, you should try to get to Hinkle to watch a Butler basketball game. Number four is Fenway Park, and I'm a Yankees fan, Paul, but I think Fenway's got a lot more character than Yankee Stadium. That's my favorite places, second favorite uh-huh. place to see a baseball game. We'll get to the rest of the list later in the show. I've got some more college basketball, an NFL stadium, a couple a college football stadium, and a lot more to talk about when we get to
good list.
Later yep. later in the show. But there's a lot of great stadiums out there, and there's some crappy ones too, Paul. We'll get to the worst of list yep. as well later in the show.
Yeah, coming. Yeah, I want to hear that yeah. coming up next as well. I've been to Fenway, saw Clemens pitch game one of a doubleheader. Fenway is fantastic as well, but I got to go Wrigley.
Wrigley
slight
one.
Edge to Wrigley.
You got Wrigley one. Fenway two.
Yep. Yes, that's yeah. how I that's how I would rank them yeah. too. More on this coming up, and tweet at us and email the show ftm@vsin.com. Best and worst stadiums to watch a sporting event. We continue with this. Follow the money, VSIN. Still to come, Phil Sims, Dan Saley to talk a little college football as well. Ron Flatter on the ponies. Sam Gordon from the Las Vegas Review-Journal about the NBA's plan, at least talked about, to play in Las Vegas. And also Mark Cannizzaro from the New York Post as well. Talk about golf and maybe Tiger Phil part two. Mm-hmm. Tweet at us and email the show, ftm@vsin.com. Best and worst stadiums, sports stadiums, as we finish. I can't even come close to your list. You know, I go Wrigley Field and also Fenway Park. Dodger Stadium also was, I liked the Dodger dog lived up to the hype, but I was pleasantly surprised with Dodger Stadium too when I went to a couple games out there. But nothing like Wrigley, nothing like Fenway, two cathedrals. You have a very good list though, an eclectic mix of well-rounded too with all the different sports. As we get back to your list, we can have some fun with the worst stadiums too if you want to mm-hmm. continue.
Yeah, we'll recap here. Number one, the Rose Bowl. Number two, Wrigley Field. Number three, Hinkle Fieldhouse. Butler basketball. Number four, Fenway Park. Number five is Allen Fieldhouse. That's obviously where Kansas plays. Allen Fieldhouse got so much history, man. The crowd, the crowd's great. You hear so much talk about Cameron Indoor and the Dean Dome, North Carolina. To me, Allen Fieldhouse is the best place in terms of the crowd and the entire atmosphere to see a college hoops game. Hinkle is my favorite arena or field house, but Allen Fieldhouse, when that place is jammed for a Kansas basketball game, you cannot top it. Number six, I thought about Paul putting Soldier Field on this list, but I've seen so many ugly Bears games at Soldier Field, I just have too many bad memories. So Lambeau Field is on my list in the top 10. I actually love going up to Green Bay to Lambeau Field. I've probably seen 10 Bears-Packers games up there. It's an awesome place to see an NFL game. Number seven, I said I'm a Yankees fan, but I ranked Fenway higher on this list. I've got a Yankee Stadium at number seven. I've been to old Yankee Stadium and the new one.
Wow.
You know, the old one's got a lot more history. I appreciated that place. The new one's so much nicer, but I kind of like the old Yankee Stadium. Let's go. Number eight, Dodger Stadium. Chavez Ravine. I like the way it sits in the hills. And
yes.
It's got a lot of character, Paul, and that's what I'm talking about. A lot of these stadiums on my list are old stadiums that have a lot of character. I think some of the new places lack that. And one that's not on my list, Paul, is Candlestick Park. Did you ever get a chance to see?
Yes, I did.
Yeah,
yes, I was there.
I love Candlestick. Going to football, I went to some baseball games out there, but I was a kid then. I saw some football games in more recent years, and I just like Candlestick Point and the fact the stadium's out there on the water. Now they play in that cookie-cutter antiseptic stadium in Santa Clara. It's just not the same. You know, a lot of these old stadiums have so much more character. That's what you appreciate. Number nine on my list is Notre Dame Stadium. I've been to every Big Ten football stadium. I'm not blown away by the Big House or the Horseshoe. Those are great places. But Notre Dame Stadium, to me, is my favorite college football venue. And then a tie for number 10, and I'm going to have to make this a three-way tie, Paul, because I forgot one that I thought about after I sent in this list. Madison Square Garden, the Mecca, obviously an awesome place to see an NBA or a college basketball game. Rupp Arena, Mitch Moss could appreciate this. Paul, have you ever been to Rupp Arena?
No, and I haven't been to Lambeau either. That's on my list.
Okay. Rupp Arena seats 23,000, I think 23,000 plus. When that place is packed for a Kentucky game, it's an awesome place to be, and obviously a lot of history there. Also, number 10 and tied for my list will be the Pit in Albuquerque. Have you been to the Pit?
No, I have not.
The Pit's great. Yep. Obviously, that was the NC State Houston game. Jimmy V looking for somebody to hug. But I've seen a lot of games at the Pit in Albuquerque, and I just I love the way that arena is set up. And it's very cool. There's not a bad seat in the house.
Let me tell you something.
Uh-huh, go ahead.
You're going to be hard pressed to top that list. Anyone? I mean, that is a dynamite list. Good point. Well, the thing about Candlestick was, and I was there for a baseball game. It's like I went to a day game. Everything's fine, and then the weather changes and the wind kicks up, and you got to find a jacket. It's like all of a sudden it's 50 degrees here in the eighth inning, and that would happen with night games as well for baseball at Candlestick. But
and that's San Francisco in general, right? But it's I think even more obvious out there on Candlestick Point because the wind picks up and it gets colder out there. But that was, you're right. In baseball games, the wind became a really tricky thing out there when the wind would pick up.
Well, worst, I have to me that it starts with, there's two, Oakland Coliseum and the Metrodome, the old Metrodome. I mean, just a horrible place to watch a baseball game. And it's unfortunate, you know, that people say, oh, you're from Minnesota. I would say, yeah, reluctantly. I mean, we were stuck with the Metrodome. And you had Kirby Puckett, but that stupid hefty bag in right field, they would actually bring a limousine on the field and have the grounds crew come out and fix up the field during the game. They have a limo on the field. It was just a disaster. Remember the roof collapsed before a Vikings game because of the snow? Just a disaster. So Oakland Coliseum with the sewage issues, Metrodome, that's on my list. And you got Chicago in there too.
Yeah, my bottom five, number one's the Oakland Coliseum, number two, the Metrodome. Did we talk about that? We agreed on the bottom two?
Top two, the top two, yeah.
Yeah. The Oakland Coliseum is a sewage pit, and I loved the Raiders as a kid, so there's history there, but I've been to some Raiders games at the Oakland Coliseum, and that place is a dump. The Metrodome, I covered some Bears-Vikings games up there. And I hated going up there, Paul. I thought that the Metrodome was a horrible place to watch a football game. It was probably even worse for baseball.
Yes.
New Comiskey on the south side of Chicago. I covered the White Sox for a couple years, and I had media parking, Paul, outside the first row outside the stadium. I came out after a night game one night, and both my windows were bashed in, and everything was stolen out of my car. That's in the first row outside of Comiskey. In the media parking.
Oh,
but
my
God. You know what? Just aside from that, the stadium's in a bad neighborhood, and it's just there's nothing to it. It's a very boring, I think ordinary type of baseball stadium. Not a lot of creativity went into the design. And I've been to Old Comiskey and New Comiskey, and I actually liked Old Comiskey better. The new one is just a boring park. You look at all these new – I love the park in San Francisco. Camden Yards is great. How about the new baseball park in San Francisco? I think it's now called Oracle Park. That's an awesome park.
That's what everyone says that.
Yeah.
Everyone says that.
That almost made my top 10 list, but it was a lot of competition there. Paul, I bet you have not seen a game here. The Event Center in San Jose, where San Jose State basketball plays.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay. I was wondering, like, what? Okay. That bad?
There is a stage on one end of the floor. It's almost like it's like a convention hall. Not really. It's a very depressing place to be. And sometimes I feel like San Jose State's got a little bit of a home court advantage, because as a visiting player, when you go in there, when there are no fans and you're playing in a convention hall, you're like, it's hard to even get jacked up to play the game. You're so depressed. The Event Center in San Jose, by far the worst venue I've seen for college basketball. And then I put Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia on the list. I think the old stadiums like Riverfront, Three Rivers, Riverfront in Cincinnati, Three Rivers in Pittsburgh, Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia are very similar. But I actually kind of liked Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati, and Three Rivers was not that. But I thought Veterans Stadium was the worst of that group. They were all built about the same time. They're very similar designed stadiums, and Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia made my – you know, Tropicana Field in Tampa is one a lot of people would put. I've seen probably 15 Yankees-Rays games at Trop Field. And I don't think it's terrible. I can find some things to like about it. I could never find anything to like about Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, so that took up my number five spot, Paul.
Well, we're on the marquee in Chicago. How about Wendell Davis? What, 1993, Bears wide receiver? Would he blow out both knees on the same play on that horrific, that horrendous turf they had there?
Yep.
When I forgot, County Stadium, old County Stadium with Milwaukee,
did you
nothing
like
to it. No,
Dump?
No. Dump? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Brats were good. But other than that, I mean, there was no care, nothing to it. And remember, they had those just vanilla bleachers out there, too. Remember, Cecil Fielder cleared them one game when he was on the Tigers. There was just nothing to that park. It was that's on my top five list, too, for worst stadiums as well. County Stadium.
I could see that. How about, you know, one I want to go to, but I haven't had a chance. How about Target Field in Minneapolis? Have you been there?
No, I hear it's great.
I hear great things about it, too.
Yes.
Some under-the-radar stadiums, Paul, I almost put on the list. The Sun Bowl in El Paso. I think the Sun Bowl is a really cool place, tucked in the mountains. Kelly Bidlin, our producer, nodding his head. Yeah, that's a cool play.
Okay.
I thought the Sun Bowl was a really cool, underrated stadium. Aloha Stadium in Hawaii was, I thought, a really cool place, even though it's an old stadium. You know, played the Pro Bowl there for years. How about the Lahaina Civic Center in Maui for the Maui Invitational? You got big-time college basketball teams in this little gym that's about 200 yards from the ocean. I think that's cool. Lavelle Edwards Stadium, BYU, right there on the side of the mountains. A lot of times it's snowy up there. It's actually, if you've never been to Provo, Utah, very picturesque place. Salt Lake City is too. I think Lavelle Edwards Stadium is one of the cooler college football stadiums out there. What's your favorite college football stadium you've been to, Paul?
I think I've only been to two stadiums. I've only been to the Metrodome and Sam Boyd to watch a college football game.
Yeah, those.
I know. I was supposed to. Terrible. I know.
Those are not two good ones.
I know. I was supposed to go to Ole Miss too. I was supposed to go to an Ole Miss LSU game this past year, but I had the back issue. So I mean, that's why. All my list is basically baseball parks when I would travel around in the summer as a kid. So FTM at VSiN.com, tweet at us as well. Best and worst stadiums. Great list by Matt. And my God, that's an incredible list with all the places you've been as well. Dan Saley coming up next. You won't believe what he named his kid. We'll get to that. We'll also talk college football. And speaking of the Raiders, Matt Miller had an interesting tweet about what the Raiders should do as well as they're sitting there with all these picks. We'll get to all that coming up. Follow the money. Paulie Howard, Matt Humans, Mitch Moss is out today. He'll be back later in the week. And we'll hear from Phil Simms, too. Phil Simms with an interesting discussion and a surprise team about where Jameis Winston.
Attention all homeowners in jeopardy of foreclosure. If you owe more on your home than it's actually worth, have missed one or more mortgage payments, have been denied a loan modification, or are facing foreclosure for any reason, you must listen to this message. A toll-free mortgage relief hotline's been established for anyone having their home lost in foreclosure. Just call 888-497-1876. And see if your home qualifies. We can help stop your home from going into foreclosure or even get your home out of foreclosure. Hundreds of thousands of Americans have faced foreclosure in the past year alone. This foreclosure defense group has helped thousands of people just like you fight the foreclosure process so they can stay in their homes. But you must call 888-497-1876 now to qualify. The call and information are absolutely free and the help is real. Don't lose your home. Call the Mortgage Relief Hotline now at 888-497-1876. That's 888-497-1876. 888-497-1876.